Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. As I'm trying to adjust this headset. I don't know who with the big old noggin wore this before me. Robbie?
More than likely, yeah,
Robbie. Big old head?
He did have a hat on, so I'll give him a courtesy about that.
Okay. Wearing a big old, big one of those, noggin one of those with big the hats.
You call it a trucker hat, yeah. Kind of what D-Mate's wearing.
Or one of like one of the big ones that they wear, like
yeah,
it
must have been the really big
now.
Ones, yeah.
Yeah. Like the massive hats. That's what, my goodness.
You got PitchCom inside the hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. All right, well, I guess
Robbie,
we can
discuss
it at
come
some
on.
Point. Robbie with your big old head.
Yeah, man.
We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Happy Thursday. Elliot Friedman will join us today earlier than usual. Normally, he joins us at 1 p.m. on Thursdays, but we've got Brian Callahan at the podium, so Elliot was kind enough to move up to noon. So we will chat with Elliot Friedman. Of course, we've got the Stanley Cup Finals starting on Saturday, but also a whole lot of goalie talk, not just here, but around the league. What does the Igor Shesterkin deal in New York look like for UC Soros? How does that affect the goalie market? We'll get into all of that with Elliot Friedman. And of course, the Titans back out on the practice field today, third and final day of mandatory minicamp. Willie D, D. Mace, happy Thursday. How are we doing?
Happy Thursday to everyone. And I want to give everyone an update. As of yesterday at about 4 something, I guess it was around that time, I was able to locate my wallet.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Okay, now we need details on this.
Okay. So I first went to the dentist because that's where I had to go the other day when I noticed that I did have my wallet. So called the dentist first. They said they didn't have it. So I wanted to make sure because there's some tall grass right outside the dentist's office and it's real thick. So if something falls in there, it can get like lodged in there and nobody would know. So I went over there and you know, I get out of my car and it's this individual just sitting in their car. I guess they're waiting on somebody else. I know they probably thought like, what is this crazy old doing? Looking around. What is he doing? So I'm feeling kind of awkward because I'm like, I don't want this person to think like I'm just some weirdo.
Yeah, right.
So I got out, looked a little bit, didn't see it. So I got back in my car and I was thinking like, where did I go? So it's crazy how your brain works. I wasn't thinking about it. So as I started riding down the street, I had a flashback of the day before. Like identical, it just came to my head. Like I'm driving down the street and there was two cars in front of me. And I'm like, what did I do when these two cars were in front of me? I made a right and went to the mall. So I was like, okay, let me go check the mall. So I go in, go to Nordstrom's, go to the counter, because I had to pick up something the day before anyway. That's why I went there. And I asked the young lady, I said, did you by any chance anyone find a wallet? And she said, what color, how did it look? And when she said that, I knew she had it. So I said, it's a black tweeted wallet. And she looked, she's like, she pulled it out. It's like, here you go. I was like, oh, I wanted to give her the biggest hug. I'm like, thank you. And then when I did that, I was listening to my man, Nick, put it in your wallet. Put the AirTag.
Just do it.
And I did it. As soon as I got home, I put the AirTag in there. So I will know where it is at all times.
Thank goodness you found it, because if it wasn't at Nordstrom and you braved the mall traffic and finding a parking spot at the mall.
Yeah. Only to come up empty.
It was like, y'all just don't know how.
Could have gone to Annie Ann's or something.
Y'all don't know how I felt inside when I didn't have my wallet. It just felt like.
You feel naked.
It felt worse. It was just like, because it's everything's
helpless.
In there.
Like, helpless.
ID, credit cards, you know, just up. It just, and I'm like, oh, man, somebody's going to find this. And luckily, I don't think they looked in it, because I think if they would have looked in it, somebody probably would have said, okay, let me try to figure out how I can get in contact with this person. Because somebody's done that to me before where I left something.
Yeah.
I left my ID and they look at it and they contact me through like social media and say, hey, you left your, and I'm like, okay, thank you. And then go get it. So that has happened. So obviously they didn't look in it, which was great. But she didn't look in it until I asked her and then she pulled it out and then she pulled it. It was like the ID. To make sure it was me. And she's like, okay, here you go.
And
I was like, whew.
Can we give a shout out to all employees of restaurants and stores and stuff like that that have that happen and they keep
and they keep it.
Possessions there, whether it's your keys, your wallet, AirPods. Yeah. I had a fun moment with one of the Predators. I mean, pretty high-ranking person on the Predators left his mm-hmm. AirPods in there in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. He went back hours later, and they were there, and he made it a point to find, he said, who is the person that brought them mm-hmm. over here? And he gave them a big reward, shall okay. we say. So, but
it's so nice.
Because that's not something you have
exactly,
to do.
Like,
you're
yeah.
always worried. Oh,
especially like AirPods, or something like
they're
that.
Just
yeah.
pocket those bad boys.
I'm pretty sure someone did that to my AirPods.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. they're listening to the show right now
AirPods.
Through your AirPods.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'm sure they probably feel one with me with my AirPods. And now I'm like, all right, great. Let me just go buy a new pair of AirPods. And back at in my old job at ESPN, I had a work phone. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, look at me. I got two phones. I'm the fanciest person in the world. And of course, like within a week of getting my
you
work phone, I left it at work. Mm-hmm. I left it in a control room at ESPN when we were doing one of our shows. And I tracked it when I got home when I realized I didn't have it. I tracked it and it was at ESPN headquarters. And I thought, okay, perfect. I'll just go back there tomorrow. It'll be sitting there. There's a kajillion different security measures that mm-hmm. you have to get through. I'm like, it's going to be there. It's going to be at HR, you know, lost and found, whatever. I get back to work and it's not there. Mm-hmm. And the control, you know, the director in the control room that day, I worked with him all the time. I was close to him. And I was like, Stacy, did you find my phone? He's like, yes, I did. And I was going to grab it, but I thought you were going to come looking for it the next day. So I just went ahead and left it for you. I thought, okay, great. I track it again. It's in the Bronx.
Oh, wow.
It's in the Bronx. Somebody took it to a Yankee game.
Exactly.
And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
Wow. In the Bronx.
In the Bronx. And I was like, surely I don't think they have any intention of returning that to me if they bring it to the Bronx. But I hope, you know, whatever, you know, DJ LeMahieu or Aaron Judge or whatever Yankee player had my phone was enjoying it in the Bronx.
Yeah. Well, it happens sometimes.
And then I didn't get another work phone after that.
I wouldn't have gave you another work phone. It's like, too bad, so sad. I'm deducting that from your check, and we're going to keep on going.
Yeah.
But here's the funny part about that is that I told my daughter, because my daughter's like me, and this is probably the one bad thing that she gets for me. She will lose things. Like, she will lose things and be searching the whole house and finally end up. So her and I have that honest together.
Oh, boy.
But I told my daughter, because she was like, Dad, are you coming over today so we can go through some stuff for the trip? And I was like, yeah. I said, first I got to find my wallet. And she was like, Dad, you lost your wallet again? I was like, yeah. And she said, well, you need to get it back. And I'm thinking like, okay, she's saying that because my ID and stuff is in there.
Yeah.
And she was like, no, we bought you that wallet. That's a Bottega wallet. Your DJ and I bought that wallet. You need to get it. I was like, so you don't care about my ID and my credit cards?
Identity
theft. Like, no, we bought that wallet.
Yeah.
And you need to get it back. I was like, okay.
Well, I'm glad you found your wallet, D-Mace.
Yeah,
all
it,
is
yes.
well. We can all breathe mm-hmm. a sigh of relief. All right, let's get into it because the Titans will be back out on the practice field today, but we won't be able to report anything until around, you know, 1 o'clock. So let's take a look back at yesterday. Yesterday at mandatory minicamp. Obviously, we are not able to be there. Practice happens during our show, so we rely on all the great reporters that are there, whether it's TD, you know, Trevor Maddage was out there the past couple of days. Paul Kuharsky and Jim Wyatt. So after the days of practice that we're not able to be out there, I'll go to Jim Wyatt's observations from practice because, you know, if anybody needs the info, Jim Wyatt's got the info. So I read this from Jim Wyatt yesterday. It says, Levis was 1 of 4 in the first 7-on-7 period and 2 of 4 in his second opportunity, making him 3 of 8 for the day. Not great. Levis was 6 of 10 in 7-on-7 drills on day 1 of the minicamp. One pass from Levis sailed over the hands of tight end Josh Wiley and ended up in the lake, a free souvenir for the geese. And I'm thinking to myself, where is the lake?
I don't
what
consider that a lake.
Isn't it just like kind of like a pond?
Kind of a pond.
It's a dirty pond.
Is
that's
that
what
pond?
It is.
That's
it's not
like,
a lake.
It's, but it's far.
Who was it that swam across?
Oh yeah, Dinopoli, Gennaro Dinopoli.
Gennaro Dinopoli.
Yeah,
he
Dinopoli
swam across the pond,
and then got a staph infection.
Yeah,
I'm
he
sure
probably he was sick after that. That's not a lake. I don't consider that a lake. Now
it is
probably by definition, it probably would be a lake.
Now, okay, let's for people that haven't been there though.
Yes,
if you throw the ball in a certain field in the back of the end zone and it's tipped, it could end up in
and that's
or if you're just trying to throw the ball away.
Okay,
I don't know.
Threw it because it must have hit the ground and then went over the gate or went through the gate somehow and then landed in the water. I'm sure it just didn't land, go over his head like Rico in Napoleon Dynamite. It went over his head, went over the gate, and then into the water. I hope it didn't do that.
That's what I'm picturing in my head. Is it just in the lake?
Uncle Rico had a pretty good
Uncle Rico had a pretty good
throw that pigskin a quarter
not great accuracy.
And Jim White
I think back in 82, he was, isn't that what he said back in 82?
Yeah, 82, you could throw the ball a quarter mile.
Quarter mile. Jim White did clarify and kind of revised his observations from practice. Said after the ball bounced high off the grass, it cleared the fence and ended up in the lake. But I liked my mental image first.
Uncle Rico's a better
that
story.
That make for better,
theater of the mind.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So I'm thinking, first of all,
I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
Dead serious.
So that's what Will
Uncle Rico couldn't even throw it in the lake. The quote unquote lake that is not anywhere close to the practice field. That sucker is sailing. Mm. But all jokes aside, we are not able to be at practice. We have to rely on the reporting. Mm. But the reporting, it's not been great. A tough couple of days for Will Levis. Not a tough couple of days for the Geese, who now have a football to play with.
Exactly.
But a tough couple of days for Will Levis. Again, Jim Wyatt's reporting 3 of 8 on the day and 6 of 10 and 7 on 7s on day 1 of minicamp. Mm-hmm. What's the concern level for Will Levis right now, understanding that it is June 6th and today we're just starting the third day of minicamp?
If you're putting this on a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 5, however you want to do it, I would say if we're doing it from 1 to 10, I would say a 2. I'm not too concerned right now for one major reason. This is a new offense, and he's trying to get himself acclimated to this offense just like everybody else is. He's trying to learn the macro before he learns the micro. He's trying to learn, he's trying to see everything as the plays are being given to him in a meeting. He's trying to see the whole field at this point in time. And as you get closer and closer, you start to narrow it down a little bit. So I'm not too concerned. Typically, new coordinators, a new quarterback, you're going to have your growing pains within the offense. Some days, going 6 for 10 is not bad. It's not bad at all. But there are going to be some days where they're going to look on, and there are going to be some days that they're not. And then typically the defense is going to be a little bit ahead of the offense no matter what. When you first start off camp, I don't care if you got, Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning at quarterback. It don't matter. The defense typically – starts off fast, they are on top of the offense and they're getting the best of the offense in most of the drills. And then as camp goes, the offense tends to find its rhythm. Guys get used to what's being called, placement where they need to be. So then the offense really settles in. So right now, June 6th, I'm not concerned. My concern level is about a 2. But if it continues July 20-something into August, then that's where you have to start to wonder, okay, is he picking up the offense or is he meshing with the guys the way he needs to? Right now, it's not a huge concern of mine. You're going to have these types of practices. The defense is going to be on offense, especially when you have on no pads. So the defense is going to be on the offense. But if this continues late July, really into August, then I think that's when we start to need to really pay attention to, how he's picking up the offense at practice. Or because ultimately, once you get into August, we're going to be, doing the joint practices, having preseason games. So if it continues then that's when we need to start to really talk about whether he can improve as a quarterback or not.
I would concur. I mean, it's a, to me, it's not even worth a grade. I'm just glad that some of my early practices at Vandenberg basketball weren't keeping stats. You know, because when everything is new for everybody, I do think you have to give, especially the quarterback, a little more time. So I think it's irrelevant right now what his stats are in these practices. That's what I would say. And I would agree that as you get into training camp and they've played together more, that's when I do think it's – I still don't put tons of stock. Like, I'll never forget Ryan Tannehill versus the Patriots in the controlled scrimmage, which was in Nashville with Tom Brady. It was Tannehill's first year when he was the backup still to Mariota. He had an unbelievable bad day or something, and it was all over the place. It was like 2 for 16 or – I mean – way worse than the numbers you just gave Will Levis. And everybody was like, what? Rand, Tannehill did what? You know, and halfway through the season, he saved the season, and they ended up in the AFC Championship game. So context there. But I think D. Mace's point is the key. It's brand new for everybody. It's a new coordinator, new coach, new, you know, quarterback, young quarterback, new receivers. So I'm not expecting a Picasso. And even if they were, I wouldn't be sitting there going, ho-ho, check out this new offense, man.
Yeah.
This guy's got it. Like, I think it's irrelevant either way, even if you were 10 for 10.
I think that is the key there for me. At this point in the offseason, you cannot get too high and you cannot get too low, especially when it's a young quarterback with a new offense and a lot of shifting pieces. Because I thought to myself, okay, well, what if Levis looked awesome? Well, okay. You can look great on June 5th. How do you look on October 15th? Mm-hmm. So there are so many moving pieces and changes. And Will Levis spoke to the media a couple of days ago. He talked about some things that he was changing. He was tweaking his stance. I'm sure, obviously, working with Brian Callahan and this entire offensive coaching staff, little things that they're trying to tweak and to work on. And that takes time to work through. So I'm not overly concerned. Is it something that I'm going to be monitoring and looking at? Of course, because he's the quarterback. Of course we're going to be looking at
day over day.
Like how is he evolving? I think it's fair. He's the quarterback.
But I think it's a good question, though, to ask, especially in a June practice, should we be even keeping track of these scores? Because, again, for the relevancy, if I'm a coach, I'm almost trying to create things that are like I'm not coming out saying I want Will Levis to go 10 for 10 today, because if he wanted to, he could.
Oh yeah, he can.
Right, I'll throw five swing passes to D. Mace over here. I'll throw five swing passes to you over there.
It's advantage.
I'm 10 for 10.
It's advantage.
No, I know. I'm talking about just the play call. I get the snap. You're standing right there in the slot. I throw it to you. It's a complete pass. And the stats are the next day, Willie goes 10 for 10. But I threw 10 passes that, you know, anybody could complete.
Yeah, that would be silly.
So that's the point. And so you don't know what they're working on on that particular day. What plays are they trying to run? What are they going in knowing, look, this is going to be ugly today, but we got to work on this stuff. So you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like we have to know the context
of
what's the practice plan? What's the goal of that day? The goal of every day is not let's make sure the quarterback goes 10 for 10, because that doesn't do any good. That doesn't prepare you.
It doesn't do anybody good if you set up a practice where the offense is no doubt 100% is going to be successful, or the defense is 100% going to be successful. These coaches they structure out these practices together. Like, this is what we're doing. This is what we think about doing. Especially, and I'm just talking like camps. I'm not talking when you get in the season. When you get in the season, it's something totally different, because typically the offense, first team offense, is never practicing against the first team defense unless we do like a live, like a 2-minute drill for both teams.
Yeah, like Jack Gibbons intercepted Will Levis.
Absolutely. But other than that, you're trying to set up situations within a practice that are not so advantageous for your offense and see how the quarterback reacts to that. You know, we're going to run this play. The defense is going to almost play the perfect defense. Let me see what the quarterback does, because every play we run is not going to be an ideal play. Every play we run is not going to work the way we designed for it to work. Sometimes we're going to call a play and the defense is going to call a right defense for our play, and we have to find out as a team if that quarterback can cipher through all that stuff and end up finding the right guy. So some practices, It's just going to be, all right, we're just going at it. No script or whatnot. We're just calling plays, boom, boom, boom. Typically 2 minutes like that, and we might have some other drills like that. But a lot of times it's everything scripted. And what you want to do, again, you want to put, say, like the offense, and I'm going to talk about the offense right now. You want to put the offense in a position where, you know, they have to figure it out in a sense. Like, we're going to run our plays, but everything is not going to be – I'm not scripting everything to be 100%. Because if I do that, we get in the game, you're looking for it to be the way we ran it in practice. It's not going to be that way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're going to have – they're going to call a right defense for our right offense, and we're going to have to figure it out. And that's the thing with quarterbacks. They just got to figure it out. And I think that's what you want to see in Will. You want to see if he can figure these things out. It's not that – even though I gave it a 2, it's not that I don't care. It's that I want to see progression in him. Yeah. I want to see, you know, okay, today was, you know, you went 2 for 8. Okay, let's see what happens tomorrow. If you go 4 for 8, well, it's better than going for 2 for 8. And if you continue to, that's what we want to see. You build on each day.
Yeah, especially letting
the next day not be like the previous day.
Especially if you're looking for a degree of difficulty. What I want to put you in tough situations mm-hmm. in practice.
Yeah,
I want to put the pressure on you in practice. In a game, it's going to be a different thing. I'm trying not to put you in those positions in the game. I'm trying to put you in favorable situations. But I want to see you under fire in the practices. Depending on the day, every day is going to be a little different. But that's why I'm not really worried one way or the other if the stats are 10 for 10 or 4 for 10.
But that's exactly why I said it's something that I'm going to be looking at, because it's the quarterback. I'm not just going to say, well, I don't care at all about it, because mm-hmm. it's practice. It's something.
Exactly.
But it's with the understanding of there's a lot of newness and there's a lot of change. And there are absolutely areas in Will Levis's game that needs to be better if he is going to ultimately become the franchise quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. I do want to get into your thoughts on this and some other reactions, or maybe overreactions, maybe even toxic reactions to practice. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
What the f*** is toxic positivity, man? Misery loves company, don't it?
I just, man, with Steelman, man, like, I just, at this point, like, I'm just going to put him in the same category as Paul Kaharsky at this point, because, like, they just the same person to me, man. Like, they just look for any little thing they can nitpick with the Titans, man.
PK it'd be a point to what PK be saying, but PK just say the what? That people don't want to hear at the time. Jared, on the other hand, Jared is in the realm of being a conspiracy theorist.
What in the realm is toxic positivity?
Oh my goodness!
Oh,
who was that?
That was the Titans Coliseum.
Yes,
podcast.
Okay.
And they have had some funny content just ripping on Jared.
That's why he likes it so much.
A blast.
That's why I was wondering, like, why does he like the podcast? Because I never listened to it. He mentioned it. I think that was the podcast he mentioned yesterday. He was like, I just started loving this podcast, and he mentioned. I'm like, why does he love it? I'm not saying I don't like it or not. I just hadn't listened to it.
They call him a conspiracy.
So now I know, because they mention his name a lot, I guess. I would like it, too, if they mention my name a lot. So there you go.
I saw that clip on Twitter. And the first, you know, the clip on Twitter, they put the subtitles, like the words up on the video of what they were saying. And I didn't have the sound on. All I saw was, what the bleep is toxic positivity? So I appreciated that. I very much appreciate it.
Content.
Yeah. So shout out to the Titans Coliseum podcast for that. Speaking of the toxic positivity, this is the difficult thing, I think, with practices. Mm-hmm. With training camp, practice, you can really paint it with whatever brush you want to paint mm-hmm. it with. You can look at it as a glass half full or a glass half empty. Like I mentioned in the last segment, Jack Gibbons picked off Will Levis yesterday. Gabe Judy Lolly, who, frankly, I had no idea who he was. He was an undrafted free agent. I believe he started at Vanderbilt, finished his career at Tennessee. An undrafted free agent. He was sticky in coverage yesterday. I believe he had a pick on Tuesday in practice. Basically, the reason why I know his name now is because he's been doing enough things at practice to get noticed. So I think the way that you can look at it is, well, look at this defense. Look at Jack Gibbons. Look what Denard Wilson has been able to do with Jack Gibbons getting a pick in practice. Or you can look at it and say, oh, no, a guy I've never even heard of before is getting all up in Will Levis's grill and, you know, making all kinds of plays like this. I think the truth kind of lies somewhere in the middle. Mm-hmm. With, you know, we talked about this last season with in training camp, where Arden Key was flying all over the place. And we were like, my goodness, Arden Key's going to be a problem. Arden Key's a really good player. The problem was the offensive line.
Yeah.
The offensive line was just much worse than we expected it to be. So that's my cautionary tale for practices and as we get into training camp is, however you want to spin it, you can probably spin it that way.
Yeah, you can. You know, that's why you have to be very careful when, you know, there are a bunch of people out there that really do a good job at watching practice and then giving a report on it. And I'm sure they got it. They're mindful of certain things that, you know, they put out and whatnot. Cause you don't want to make something unless you're just going for clicks, then you're going to make, you're going to make everything seem a little bit more, you know, a little bit more, I don't know, I'm looking for where I can't find it, but you exaggerate a little bit on what you're seeing. But like for instance, if, you know, Jim puts down the ball, sails in the, you know, in the lake,
it went all the way to the Cumberland River.
If you just look at it and don't read the rest of what he's saying, you're like, oh my goodness, he threw the ball in the lake. How in the hell can you throw the ball in a lake from a football field? Like, he's not accurate. Then as you read, and, you know, Jim tells you the ball hit the ground, bounced over the gate and goes into the lake. So you have to be. You're telling a story, but in telling a story, you have to be careful because you don't want people to get a, you know, a misconception of what you're trying to describe here. You know, so you got to be careful when during camps and when you want to be truthful in what you're saying.
And even if it's 100% truthful, as simple as Jack Gibbons intercepted Will Levis. That's a fact and that's what
happened.
It's
a fact, yeah.
But how you interpret that could be several different things. Exactly. Jack Gibbons is a future All-Pro, or Will Levis is going to be the worst quarterback to ever play in the history of the NFL. It's a wide margin.
Yeah, there's a lot in between those
two. There's a lot in between the actual interception and actual throwing of the pass.
I don't think either of those things are going to be true.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I've tried to think about this, these practices in June, in May, even in training camp to a degree. And then, like, I think the Titans are doing a good job. They're making a lot of these coaches available. But in a scrum where everybody's listening and you're giving the same answer to 15 people, I think you're getting a lot more of a, you know, a filtered answer. I think to try to really interpret what the coaches think of these practices, I think you really need to have, like, conversations with them away from everybody else where, you know, it's off the record a little bit. It's just for background knowledge. To me, that's when you can really learn something of, okay, how is Gibbons doing? Hey, I just saw him intercept a pass. How's he doing? You think he's making a jump? You know, that's a key question. If you ask that in a scrum, or if you just said, Gibbons intercepted a pass at practice yesterday, he's awesome. You know, we're not going to get the whole story there. But I think if you get that observation and then you turn around and you talk to the linebackers coach or you know, you get the defensive coordinator away from everybody and say, let's have a conversation. That takes a lot of time, but that's to me how you get insightful stuff from these practices.
And I'm sure. Because
they know the context of what the drill was, what the play was, and why it happened. Did he intercept it because he made a great read, or was there just a great play by another guy that took away a read that had him throw back? You know, there's a lot of different ways a guy ends up with the interception.
We might know that answer if we were able to be at practice. And that's another tough thing. We are now left to the interpretation of reporting from fantastic reporters with great reporting, but we might know the answer to that a little bit better if we were able to be out there.
Well, so they don't, you know, in defense of, you know, organizations, not just the Titans organization, in the defense of organizations, this time of year, it's like especially now in this situation, we all trying to figure things out, meaning the coaching staff. We all trying to figure things out too. So, you know, if we allow, you know, you to come to practice every day and see all of what we're doing, you'll probably come out thinking the worst of this offense. Why? Because it's a new offense. The guys are just learning, and guys are going to struggle. They are going to struggle. You're going to see a ball that sails over a guy's head. You're going to see a guy runs a slant, and the quarterback was thinking, man, he was supposed to run an out, and he throws it toward the out, or he hesitates for a minute and tries to throw it in there, and it gets intercepted or knocked down. From the outside, you're looking at, man, that was a bad pass. Why did he make that pass? But if I'm a quarterback, I'm the coaches, I know, well, that guy wasn't supposed to run that route. Mm-hmm. He held the quarterback up, or it took him a long time to come out of that route. He held the quarterback up a little bit. Then the quarterback had to come to the other side, and by the time he came to the other side, it was a little bit too late, and he didn't see that backer coming through. So there are nuances within all of this. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, listen, the PKs and the Jim Wyatts and even Jarrett, hopefully he knows. This is a part of what happens in camp early on. You're going to see a Gibbons intercept a pass. Now, if Gibbons continue to intercept passes when we get into July and August, we got to either he's a hell of an athlete, a hell of a linebacker, or we got a problem with our quarterback. One of the two.
Yeah.
Both of them can't be the same. So we got to have a problem with one or the other. It's going to continue to be like that. There's going to continue to be, you know, reports of Will Levis missing this guy or this guy dropping a pass. I'm not going to consider it the end all be all. Not that I'm dismissing their report of what they're seeing. I just know how this game operates and how early it is. If we continue to have these problems late July, August,
yeah,
that's where we need to start. Oh, okay, hold on. What's going on here?
It's a process.
Yeah.
And that I'm glad that you brought that up, because the next question is, if we are going to kind of look at this and say, look, it's a process and it's going to take some time, at what point do we no longer say that? At what point can we no longer say, hey, like, it's just a process, mm-hmm. and then our conversation starts to more become like, yikes, I actually am a little bit nervous because we are X number of weeks away from traveling to Soldier Field and there's still some issues happening with the quarterback.
Listen to the coaches. They'll tell you. They may not specifically zero in on one guy, mm-hmm. but just listen to them closely. They will start, the more and more they talk, they will start to show their frustration, or listen to some of the veteran guys, the leaders. If it continues to happen, it will be harder and harder for them to answer those questions. You will see a lot of pausing and a lot of or a lot of trying to skate it or trying to, you know, paint this other picture when what we're watching is not what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what we need to watch, is if it continues, watch the mannerism of the coaches. Watch the mannerism of the players when they start talking about specific things. If it's not going right and it's not going right for a while, these players and they can't hold back. They cannot hold back. They may not flat out tell you, but if you listen to them, they will tell you, yeah, we got some problems here that we need to fix before the season starts.
Yeah, I think to me, that's probably training camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That in training camp, not every day is going to be great. Will Levis isn't going to go out there and have every single day, day after day, a great day with beautiful passes and no issues, you know, going off without a hitch. But to me, it's training camp. You need to start seeing kind of the puzzle pieces fit together. You need to start seeing something click in Will Levis and seeing that out on the practice field. But I will say one thing that at least made me optimistic. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm toxic. Seeing a lot of reports of Will Levis connecting with Tyler Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to see, albeit a veteran, but a new receiver coming in and Will Levis kind of having a quick chemistry with Tyler Boyd, because what was our complaint last year? It was Will Levis to D-Hop. Every single time the ball released out of Will Levis's hands, it was going to D-Hop, and it was so obvious for opposing defenses to defend. So to see that kind of start to click, it's good to see, especially since Tyler Boyd is a receiver that is already, you know, entrenched within this offense.
Yes, it is good that...
It's not everything.
Yeah, it's not everything, but it is good. But that's the easiest throw to make. He's in a slot. He's closest to you, and a lot of his routes are short and intermediate routes, where he's facing probably a linebacker, some type of zone defense, where you can figure out what he's doing and where he will be because everything's so compact and it's right in front of your face. So that's sort of like an easy throw for him to make consistently. Those outside throws, they're hard to make. Not to say that Will can't make them, because he can, but I'm saying the easiest throw, get completions, keep moving the ball down.
In the slot.
If those guys throw it to the slot. Here's what I'm going to be looking for. It's not now. It's when the grenades are being thrown, the real grenades, and people, this means something. Are you going to be able to, as a young quarterback, are you going to be able to say discipline and see the whole field? Mm-hmm. Or will you, under that pressure, sort of shrink and convert back to what you were last year and looking for D-hop every time? Because you know, out of everybody on this field, that guy right there, more than likely, he's going to make the catch. Mm-hmm. Or if he's not going to make it, he's going to knock it down. Nobody else is going to get it. That's what I want to start to see. And that doesn't come until July when they're in these other practices with other teams or when they're in drills where there's no script and we're live and we're going. I want to see if he's able to still then take that drop. If he sees Tyler Boyd, he throws it. Or if he's under pressure, he throws it. Bam, I know what Boyd is. If he's not doing it and he's consistently trying to throw it outside because he's under pressure, that tells me he has not gotten away from that security blanket just yet. It may take him some time. Right now, he can do it. There's no rush. There's really not nothing. Boom, boom, I can see everything. It's when the grenades are being thrown, really. Are you going to revert back? And there's nothing wrong with throwing it to D-Hop, nothing at all. But you got to sort of get yourself out of that mindset of, that's my security blanket, I know. So when things get locked, I'm going to him. You got to know that Ridley can be your security blanket as well. Or Tyler Boyd can be that guy. You just got to stick with him.
When your back's against the wall, can you
exactly.
keep calm?
Can you keep calm?
Can you slow down and breathe and continue mm-hmm. to go through your progressions under pressure?
Exactly.
A rookie season, nobody's going to expect you to do that. Mm-hmm. But as you go along and you learn a new offense, your training wheels are going to have to start to come off. All right, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get into your thoughts, plus a wild headline that I did not expect to come out this morning involving one of D-Mace's teams. So we'll get D-Mace's reaction and our reaction to that coming up next. Caroline Willie D-Mace, you can purchase your tickets right now for the Music City Grand Prix at the Nashville Super Speedway on Friday, September 13th through Sunday, September 15th at MusicCityGP.com. As the race in station, 102.5 The Game has a special offer for a limited time. Use the promo code GAME, G-A-M-E, for a 20% discount right now through June 16th.
The Lakers over the next few days are in a full court press to convince Dan Hurley to come to LA. He has told them that he wants to hear them out. And the Lakers, Rob Pelinka, they want to put a program in place in LA. They don't want to just have coach to coach. They want to put a program in for the long term. They want Dan Hurley's player development program. The NBA is changing. You can't in LA anymore just trade 3 or 4 first round picks to bring in a star player and think you can have a roster that can win. That is how they got Anthony Davis. But you are seeing you have to draft well, you have to develop your young players. And in LA, I think the belief is always you're going to be able to get the star player who, you know, finds his way to LA, but you're going to have to grow your young players. Mm. And the idea of Bronny James and the Lakers, they have the 55th pick. Who better, potentially, than Dan Hurley to be the development coach, to lead his growth, than the coach who's, you know, really dominated the college sport?
All right, that was Woj on Unsportsmanlike this morning. Caroline Willie D-Mace, the headline of the morning, came out early this morning, is that the Los Angeles Lakers are targeting UConn head coach Dan Hurley to fill their head coaching vacancy. And the first thing that I thought of when I saw that was, they're going to draft Bronny James, aren't they? LeBron James went into the, you know, general manager or owner's office, whatever it is, and said, you are going to draft my son, and you are going to bring in the best college head coach you can to develop him into an NBA player. That's the way that I view it.
There's a lot of levels to this, in my opinion. Now, D-Mace mm-hmm. follows the Lakers, so I want to first ask you, mm-hmm. D-Mace, when you heard that, do you like that idea?
Yeah, I do.
Knowing that the history would tell you that there aren't a ton of
college coaches
that have done that made the transition to the NBA successfully. Billy Donovan is one.
Yes.
Larry Brown is one. Those are the only two that have won championships in both. But there's a lot of
guys that have gone in there
and then turned right around and came back to college.
Yes. It's like, it's not what I didn't think it was going to be like this. But no, I look at this move and I'm glad. I'm happy. You know, the whole J.J. Redick thing has sort of quieted down. Not that I don't think J.J. Redick would be a good head coach, but there's just too much of a relationship built with he and LeBron James. And that thing can go south very, very quickly if they're not winning. I think J.J. Redick would end up like Walton the year Walton was coach. With the Lakers, what was that? Maybe 8 years ago, something like that. He only coached the season. I'm talking about the son, not the father. He only coached
the
season.
Was it Adam Walton that was the coach? Or Luke?
Luke Walton. Yeah. And he was a coach for a year. And they got rid of him because it just didn't, you know, it didn't fit. No matter what, it just didn't fit. And I just thought, you bring J.J. Redick in, it may end up backfiring on you. They go out, and now Dan Hurley is the front runner for the job, and it seems like he's going to be the next head coach of the greatest franchise in sports, and that's the Los Angeles Lakers. Second greatest is Tennessee, and them in Baltimore tie for second. But you see where the theme is going. I play for those two teams.
Interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah, why don't you give me a blind resume, and I'll tell you who gave that list.
Exactly. But I can see what Woj was saying, the development, because if you look at the West, and more importantly, you narrow it down to one or two teams. Denver has a young team, relatively. And then Oklahoma City, their team is definitely young.
The average age is like 14.
Exactly. So, and they're and those guys are developing. You see how good they are. The Lakers can't keep going down this road, like Woj said, of trying to bring in these high-priced, you know, free agents and expect then now we can win a championship, because you're doing the same formula that everybody else is doing. You know, you don't have no better players than the next person has. Actually, your players are getting older than everybody else's players. So you bring in about a guy like Dan Hurley who comes in, you have Austin Reeves, you have Rui, and you have Max Christie, three guys that are young guys within that team that they feel can grow even more. So you bring in a Dan Hurley. And what is he known for? Developing players. So you bring him in, and you hope that he can get the most out of Hachimura, or out of especially Austin Reeves, because he can be that guy that opens up the floor even more for you because of his ability to shoot the three-point shot. And that's what the Lakers have missed sorely the last couple of years. It was better this past season and the season before, but they need consistent guys that are going to develop outside shooting. If you don't have a three-point shooter or two on your team, you're not going to win a championship. You're just not going to win it because the floor is too small, and you got to be able to spread these guys out to get the shots you want. So bringing in Dan, hopefully you can get some development from some of these younger guys that you haven't gotten. I like Darvin Ham. My son hated Darvin Ham, and probably a million other people hated Darvin Ham. But they felt he wasn't getting enough out of those young guys. So you bring in, hopefully, a Dan Hurley that can develop those guys. I'm not even mentioning Bronny James.
Well,
that's a different – I think it's a part of it, but I sort of put that sort of in the back because he's not on the team yet. And I'm saying yet because it seems like that's the road they're traveling. It's to draft Bronny James in the second round somehow.
Here are my questions from afar here. Number one, can Danny Hurley – possibly last 82 games the way that he expends energy on the sidelines yelling at the referees? He's going to have to just pace himself a little bit more to survive. But the development thing is interesting. So you got twofold here. Number one, if I'm LeBron James and I'm thinking, how do I pull this thing off with Bronny? And I hear Danny Hurley, who's got and maybe Danny Hurley can sell me on, I can take your son to his potential. Mm-hmm. LeBron, you know, believes that Bronny has the potential to be an NBA player, right? He believes that as a dad. Now, he's blinded by the dad love and all that stuff, as any dad would be. But maybe the Danny Hurley angle is like, this is a guy that really has developed players. Mm-hmm. But also, if you're Danny Hurley, is it a little bit of the money? He's making plenty of money. He's got a huge contract that he is under in UConn. He can get out of it with a smaller buyout by leaving for the NBA. It's a huge buyout if he leaves for another college team. Mm-hmm. So why is he intrigued in this? Is it because, like a lot of coaches, hey, okay, the NBA is evolving. You just heard Woj say they're a little bit more into the development of players. It's not about just do you have the three superstars and you go play, you roll the ball out there, and you win because you just out-manpower everybody. There are ways to develop a roster. That's intriguing, I'm sure, to Hurley. But also it's like, am I now – can I make this work and I can leave the rat race of college basketball where everybody's a free agent every year and maybe I have a little bit more structure? I now have a developmental league in the NBA where you can have a person in the minors that's developing.
And you don't have to always worry about recruiting an individual.
That's, to me, the big thing. Is he the next in the Nick Saban, Jay Wright kind of category of
Jim Harbaugh?
This Jim Harbaugh. The college game, it is insane. I want out of the insanity. And as tough as the NBA is, I can see myself working there.
Yeah. Does his offense work? His system as a whole work in the NBA? The college game in the NBA is so different. But it almost feels like two different games.
I was reading about this morning. It's a good article in The Athletic. I sent it to you guys. And I that's a fair question because I think that's where a lot of coaches have fallen short. Is like, hey, look, it is a very different game.
Yeah.
Supposedly, his stuff that he runs at UConn is a fit for the NBA. It's NBA-style kind of stuff. But I do think that's a big thing. Like Brad Stevens, when he went from Butler to the NBA, I was like, Butler, NBA, that looks like a very big jump. And he did reasonably well, right? He did. He didn't win a title, but I was surprised at how well he did adapt. I do think there's got to be a mindset of,
how many years
okay,
did he
I've got
spend
to
in Boston?
He moved, didn't he move upstairs? Is he still with?
I think he's still in
the
front
Celtics
office, but he just
form?
Moved upstairs in the front office. Brad Stevens, he was a coach, but he moved up to the
I
front office.
I think he's somewhere in front office. Yeah, so, sounds right.
But I mean, listen, I'm sure that the NBA game in college game is different, not just from a player standpoint, but from a administrative standpoint as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you can because we looked at Dan Hurley and you know, when jobs started opening in college, his name got thrown in there quickly, but he quickly dismissed all of it. Mm-hmm. When Kentucky got rid of Cal, he quickly dismissed it like, this is where I want to be. I'm not even entertaining anything else. But when that same question, like months later, come around about the NBA, it ain't no, I'm staying in UConn. It's I'm getting on the first plane and I'm going to visit LA.
It's not I'm not taking my wife any further away from New Jersey.
Exactly.
I might take my wife to LA.
Exactly, because now it's a different game. It's a different approach. From an administrative standpoint, it's going to be different for him because he doesn't have to worry about all this recruiting and every year having to bring guys back in and re-recruiting guys. You
but
ain't got to worry about that.
If anybody likes that stuff, it's Dan Hurley.
That likes,
I have to think. That likes the
rat
constant
race.
Grind in the rat race. Like
I think
some
it
people
can get,
are just built
I think
for it.
I think for a while.
Yeah,
I do
I think every year you can't. Especially
every
not the
year,
UConn
dude,
team.
Every year has got to be a grind that over time will get to you. I would think. This is a big trend question that I think the college game has to wrap their arms around is, are you going to start losing, if it's not Dan Hurley, five other coaches who have a chance to go into
the
NBA,
yeah.
even if not
or
a head
NFL.
Coach.
It don't matter.
NFL.
Yeah.
Are you going to start losing quality coaches who just say to themselves, I can't deal with the lifestyle.
They already have.
Every day. Yeah. It's happening already.
Yeah.
You're right.
They already have.
And it's just, we're just starting this. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a full-on, give me the golden parachute. If I have a chance to get out, I am getting out.
Speaking of D-Mace's Homer list of best franchises, the Lakers and the two teams that he played for in the NFL, a Homer text, Kentucky basketball job is better than a Lakers job. I don't know about all that.
Okay.
Hey, that's their Homer-ness. I gotta like it. I can't say anything about it because I said the Lakers had the number one franchise in all of sports, and then the Titans in Baltimore are second tied. So that is definitely a homer right there.
Brad Stevens, 8 years as the coach of the Celtics. Last year was 2021.
And now in the front office.
Not in the front office.
Is that right?
I think he's in the front office now.
President of basketball operations, okay. Excuse me.
So still with the Boston. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast, will join us coming up next. A little bit early today, this week on a Thursday, because we've got Brian Callahan at the podium at 1, maybe. Who knows? But Elliot Friedman will join us coming up next. Caroline Ville-DeMays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.